Welcome to Girl, Get a Real Job, a podcast series by Women of the Week, a platform amplifying the visibility, voices and work of women, trans and non-binary creatives. I'm your host, Sara Karpanen, a multimedia artist, writer and the founder of Women of the Week. Girl, Get a Real Job is a space where we normalize money and business talk as artists and creative practitioners. To continue the conversation, please find us on social media at Women of the Week and Girl Get a Real Job. Now, let's start talking about the real worth of our creative work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Girl Get a Real Job live podcast and talk at the London Made Me pop-up shop on Carnaby Street. Before we kick off today's talk, She's the Business, a journey as a creative entrepreneur, I want to extend my thanks and gratitude to the whole London Made Me team and the Mayor of London's Creative Enterprise Zones program for making this experience possible for us. My name is Sara Karpanen and I am the founder of Women of the Week, a feminist media, a community and consultancy based in Hackney Wick, elevating the work, voices and visibility of creatives in East London and beyond. Tonight I have three incredible speakers with me who are part of the London Made Me journey. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce our speakers and then let them speak. Meet Joke Amusan, a German-Nigerian textile artist based in London. Her art highlights the complex beauty of what it means to be a black woman through the exploration of identity and heritage. Asia in the middle is a women's wear designer and the co-founder of sustainable fashion brand Omnis. The Hackney Wick-based brand was set in 2021 and has already been featured in the likes of Forbes and Drapes. Last but not least, Madeline is an Australian-born, London-based, award-winning interior designer and the co-founder of Happy Place, an elegant furniture design brand, which you can also enjoy here at the shop. Madeline is passionate about thoughtful, innovative and accessible design. So, without further ado, let's begin. Now, first of all, I have a question for you all. And I want to start asking you about your experience as being part of the program. What has been the most rewarding and the most challenging learning of the shop experience so far? Please pick up a microphone and whoever wants to begin.
I've loved being part of this program. I've learned so much already. I would say the most rewarding is seeing people themselves and just seeing them look at my art and what they make of it as well, because my art is a lot about being a conversation, starting a conversation, and then me being there, being able to speak to people directly and hear what they have to say about it and how it relates to them. And I think just having that personal connection with people is just an amazing opportunity, because most of my work, I share it online or in a gallery, and I'm not always there to see other people and how they react to it as well. I would say the most challenging part, being an artist, I don't pay as much attention to the business side of things. So I've learned a lot about when it comes to pricing different products, what works on the high street, and even the visual merchandising aspect as well. That's something that I found a bit more challenging, but it's something I'm definitely learning more about as the process goes on.
Amazing. Asia?
First of all, thank you for doing this and having us. I think that kind of also answers the question in a way, because these kind of opportunities came as part of the program. So I think that's one of the rewarding and fun parts, and on a back end being part of an amazing group of creatives and doing amazing things together. On a front end, meeting the customers and giving your beautiful pieces to new homes and seeing people wear it, react to it, is always like a nice feeling. It's foiling because you have to go back to the studio and do more things, so you need those compliments so that you can continue creating. And in terms of challenges, I think when you are primarily selling online, the way your stock works, the way your sizing and range works is completely different versus when you have it on a shelf, and how you have to have all the variations that you have already in store for a customer to browse and pick. And I found it an amazing learning experience in that sense.
Amazing. And Madeline?
Yes, again, thank you for having us. I sort of started the journey actually supporting Johnny, who's also from the Park Royal. And so we're representing a group of creatives in this space. And then I actually got approached to include our furniture designs in the space, which has been an absolute joy to have my babies in the world. But actually, it's been a really lovely experience to get to know all of the makers in Park Royal and actually just talk about an area of creativity, as opposed to just talking about things that you do. So yeah, I think the same as the other two lovely ladies here have said, it's the people on the journey has been really interesting. I think everyone's grown loads, even since the training, and it was just really brave to be here. And I think, yeah, the interactions in the store, you know, you've got tourists, you've got locals, it's been really, really enjoyable. It's exhausting. Retails?
it's hard
tiring.
Work.
It's hard
really
work.
Hard.
But there's a lot of joy that comes with being out in the world, and just this location is just phenomenal. So it's a real privilege and a joy to be here.
I agree. And Jocko, you mentioned as in, you know, and often as artists and creatives, we are not taught about financial forecasting and kind of business modelling at school. How have you learned of the business side of things as an artist?
So I've learned a lot from this program, from Laura, from Plan Make Do. That was very, very useful. I learned so many things that I've never known, which I feel like I should have. And yeah, you're right. At uni, you don't really get taught these things. You're kind of just pushed into the world and then you're expected to just do it. And I think prior to this, the way I've learned is just by doing it and then seeing what works and then making loads of mistakes. And then, that's how I keep on going, really.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add, Asia? Go on.
It sums it up perfectly. Making mistakes. Not always learning, but always making mistakes.
Also, not to pick up Jocko, your brain too much on this conversation, but I just loved what you recently shared on Instagram and quite candidly on these experiences as feeling an imposter as an artist being put into a space that you don't feel like you necessarily belong to. Could you kind of elaborate on that and share some of those thoughts with us today?
Yeah, I think I'm so grateful for the opportunities I've gotten, and with each one, I still get the imposter syndrome. And I think in this space, especially being an artist, I felt that I stood out in terms of I guess I'm a business as well, but I saw myself more as an artist and creative, and everyone else had a business and it seemed like everyone else really knew what they're doing, and I just kind of stepped in like, oh, I love to make things and everyone here does as well. But then, yeah, the business side, I wasn't really sure. And with other opportunities as well, I think it's just like sometimes even just being the only black woman in the room, like knowing that this is something that that's how I'm going to be seen, and sometimes feeling the pressure to not represent all black women, but knowing that people, like, I guess, yes, in a way, like, I don't want to, we're definitely not a monolith, but then knowing that the eyes of me in that way, and then the way I act as well. So imposter syndrome is something that I'm definitely still struggling with, but I'm trying to, I think everyone in the program has been so supportive as well, and that's really made such a big difference, and it's made me feel more welcome and more like I actually belong here, so it's, yeah, thank you.
What advice would you give to others if they have this feeling of, I don't belong here?
That's a good one. I think the advice I'd give myself is that we're all very unique and there's no one else like you, so there's no one else who can do what you do. So if you don't do it, the world's not going to see it. So you should actually just try. And if you don't succeed, you try again and you will eventually succeed.
I love that. And speaking of storytelling, you are the master of storyteller, but also, Asia, I really enjoy it. You are the real queen on Instagram, snapping your fingers and turning, you know, your kind of scenes to something else. And you also, as I mentioned at the beginning, been featured in Forbes. How has storytelling and branding come about to you? You're also a graduate from
London College of Fashion.
London College of Fashion.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because for us it comes quite naturally because I have a co-founder. So to design a collection and to be on the same page, we need some sort of guidance for both of us. And it kind of comes to that story that unites us in the first place to build the collection and then brings others on that journey with us. But definitely in terms of from business point of view, I think sometimes we don't even push the story enough because we're just too busy living the story. I do think if you are on that journey, bringing people with you on that journey really helps. And I have been engaged with people on this program as well through the journey that they take us on. So from the first day on the program when everyone was doing like their short pitches and introducing themselves, there were things that stuck with me, and later on, like weeks later, we would come back on the shop floor and build something, and I would be like, oh right, that resonates, like there was a story behind it. So I think it's quite important to connect with people through that something special. You can call it a story, you can call it one line, you can call it an emotion maybe. So yeah, I think that would be my answer.
And how do you, I mean, it's so difficult sometimes to identify that story that we have within us, that uniqueness that makes us to stand out against our competitors.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of authenticity and not trying too hard, because if you're trying too hard, then you are losing the authentic part of it. So just be yourself. I think it might seem like it's a hard one, but it's actually the easiest thing you can do, because you are already somewhat navigating and living in this world and in this life, making certain choices on a day-to-day basis that make you what Joker said, you. So you are one of a kind, so that translates into your story and everything you do as a result.
I love that. And also the kind of plethora of very unique experiences that each of you bring to the table tonight, from art, design, fashion. And Madeline, you've had quite the journey from kind of pivoting from market research in pharmaceuticals to starting your own design company. Can you walk us through a little bit of that journey in your own words? How did it come about? How on earth do you make the jump? Were you scared?
I think I've got a few years on a few of the participants here. So yeah, I've done a few different things in my time. But yeah, I have a background in psychology and sociology, ended up in sort of big corporate, and loved it for a long time, and have always been creative. So even doing things like market research, again, it was about people. I'm very much a people person. So market research was about getting in people's heads, understanding them, you know, all that sort of stuff. And my presentations are always very beautiful. I was the PowerPoint queen. But yeah, it got to the point where I had a horrendous commute. I was actually becoming a mum for the first time, and the opportunity came up to take redundancy. And I wasn't very happy in the job. It was a real boys club. I was doing quite well, but the values of the company didn't sit with me. I just wasn't getting the joy out of it anymore. So I took the opportunity to stop, take a break, be a mum, which I loved. That was really fun. And then, I've always been a nester. Always been someone who creates and sews, and my mum was a great knitter and sewer. So I've always sort of had creative outlets at home. And I kind of went, oh, I quite like this design malarkey. My husband and I came to London in 2003. We came for 2 years. ended up, we had the kids, and we actually decided we should probably go back to Australia. So we up stumps and moved back in 2011 with two small people. And I was determined to study design. If I'm going home, I will do something productive. I need to have a focus. The kids were kind of going preschool and that kind of thing at that stage. And so I went to Sydney Design School, which is actually where my business partner, Jules, who's not here tonight, but so we co-founded a business, but I studied design in Sydney, and we ended up going back to London the following year. Just things didn't pan out. We decided London actually was our spiritual home. So we came back again, which is great. I have the most well-traveled furniture in the world. And just set myself up as self-employed. I was a little bit terrified, going, oh, can I go and actually do design projects on my own? So I had two small people, so I needed some flexibility. And it just came through my network. So again, I love networking. I'm quite good with people. So it was literally playground chats. Different mums and dads had different jobs. I worked with a real estate company did their off refurb their office, and it just kind of started, and it started to snowball. And then Jules, who I met in Sydney, actually moved to London, and she was only coming for a short time, but ended up staying, and we're like, we should so do something together. Because it was kind of fine, but I'm a people person. I need that energy, and being a creative, I think, you know, often two heads are much better than one. So we started Happy Place in 2015, and off we went. And yeah, it was terrifying. It was kind of terrifying, but we just went, let's give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? And
beautiful things happened.
Yeah, it's like there's some nice things happened. And yeah, we just kind of started doing some great projects and have done some amazing things. So we won an International Design Award a few years ago, which was just such an amazing moment. Two little girls from Australia, two women from Australia, you know, on the world stage, and it was just fantastic. So yeah, but we put that passion into what we do. We love what we do, and I think that shows. I think as Aussies, we have a really, really strong work ethic. So we don't ever stop until the job is more than done. Often to our detriment, perhaps. But so it's been a really interesting journey. And at the moment, you know, things, you know, ebb and flow. So we're actually taking a bit of a break at the moment. We're both pretty worn out being a co-founder, an entrepreneur is really tiring.
Yeah.
So we both decided we needed a little bit of a break. But then other opportunities happen, and hence why I'm here today. So it's great. The universe provides.
Exactly. Yeah. Isn't it crazy when you say, okay, I'm ready to let go? You know, the universe is like, not quite yet.
Yeah, hang on a minute. Yeah, come back. So yeah, it's great. But yeah, it's such a roller coaster.
It's such a roller coaster. I think we can all agree on that. Did any of you at any point think of another career beyond of art, design or fashion?
Okay, I had, I never thought it would be a separate career, like I didn't want to leave, but I obviously had to pay bills. So I had different jobs at different periods in my life. It started with like being a chauffeur in the library, which was fun actually, because if you do the job fast, then you have time to actually look at the books. So that was really nice. Then I worked at the events, and I worked one of the worst jobs, but also best in terms of learning, was working as a personal assistant to an owner of a beauty salon in South Kensington. And it was really busy salon and quite high-end one as well, and there was a lot of stuff that was wrong there. But it was good learning experience in terms of logistics and supply chains and like ordering things or managing people and just navigating all that. And also a great learning was that no money can buy happiness, which we all know, right? We all read about it, we all watch the movies, but then we're like, oh, let's try it ourselves. Let's check if they are true or not. And yeah, I just realized that I prefer to be not as a wealthy fashion designer rather than being a quite well-off personal assistant. So, yeah.
Amazing, thank you, Asya. Joker.
Yeah, before this I was working in marketing, and it was an interesting job. Marketing is actually like a lot more than you think. There's so many different layers to it. And I think I learned a lot, but then I realized that I was furthering someone else's dream and I didn't really want to do that. And I just love to do what I've always been passionate about, which is to be an artist. And that's what I've always wanted to do since I was born. And I just took the plunge and said, okay, I'm going to leave my full-time job, leave my security, leave the money, and then see what happens. And it's been amazing. And I think it was one of you said, like, if you take the jump and you want to, like, slow down or you don't think anything's going to happen, that's when everything kind of comes at the same time. And I've just found it so rewarding. And someone once told me, like, if you don't invest in yourself, no one else will. And I've always kind of like kept that going. That's kind of keeping me going as I continue this journey, just like keep on investing in myself. And then the more I do that, the more other people see the value in me as well. Yeah.
If you don't invest in yourself, no one else will.
Yes.
I mean, there's also another version of that saying, if you don't build your dreams, others will hire you to build theirs.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I was going to add also, Joffe, like obviously the skills that you developed in your form of life actually complement what you're doing. So one of the big things, you know, people, you talk about interior design, they go, oh, 5% is design. It's project management, it's crisis management, it's presentations, it's selling, it's logistics, it's procurement, and all of the things that I learned in my corporate life really helped me be a better designer as well. So that's really, because everyone's like, oh, it's fluffing cushions and stroking sofas. It's like, no, there's so much more. And I think without that corporate background, I wouldn't have had the skills to actually be a good designer.
I think that's so true, and I actually wanted to ask you whether you kind of ever need to take a creative break to balance the business side of things, or like even just on a daily basis, how do you juggle with the two?
Okay. It's a constant juggle. Again, you're doing everything pretty much. You know, if you're lucky enough to have a team, that's great, but that obviously, you know, costs you money. So yeah, you do have to I think it's really hard to get the balance, and because it's your business, you do live and breathe it 24/7. So I think, yeah, it is. I find it. I've gotten better with time, but it's hard because again, you're passionate about what you do, and you know, you live and breathe projects. When you get a new project, that creative process, because so much time is spent doing other things, when you get that, it can be quite consuming. So I would say it takes a lot of work to get the balance. I don't know about how you guys feel.
I would say I'm still figuring it out, because to be honest, I think it's one of those when it's easy to say that, oh, it would be great if I could do 2 hours of drawing every day, but it's much, much harder to do it, because once the day starts, your emails start coming in, your calls start coming in, customer questions, requests, whatever, all the admin work is quite time-sensitive and time-intense. So I would say that's probably one of my goals actually for the next year, if we are allowed to start talking about goals for next year.
Go for it.
To make more time for the creative work, because I think another thing that I really enjoyed for this program was that actually we had like very short period of time to prepare the products for the launch. So I had very specific schedule where I had to be actually sit down and be creative, if that makes sense. So I produced some things specifically for the pop-up, and a lot of the ideas I didn't produce, but they were still in my sketchbook, and I was like, oh wow, this is nice, I haven't done this, just brainstorming and coming up with 100 ideas I don't do for a while, because I just didn't have time for it.
Yeah, I'd say the same as both of you. I'm just still kind of juggling both, especially just coming from a completely creative background, like no business at all. When I first went into art full-time a year ago, I was just all about creating, and then I realized, oh, I need to sell, I need to make money, I need to pay rent for my studio, how do I do all of that? So then I slowly started bringing in the business side of things, and then I found that it was like taking over as well, because it's actually a really important aspect of being who you are and actually marketing yourself and getting out there. So then I started trying to do 50-50, so 50% business side, a couple hours, and then 50% creating. And then I realized that also didn't really work, because some days I'd need to do more business, other days more creating to meet deadlines. So then I realized that actually just prioritizing is the way forward. So if I know I have a deadline coming up and I need to create something, I'll just spend that time creating. And then if I need to work on a business plan or a proposal to send to a client, then I'd spend all that time on that and then go back to creating later. So that's what I'm trying right now. I don't know if it's going to work in the long term, but it's working for the moment at the moment.
Yeah, that really strongly resonates with me. Like, kind of, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Really valuing the worth of my time and my creative work. And I feel like, well, my partner is in the audience, and he definitely knows that I work way over time and until the late hours. And it just kind of clocked me very recently. I realized, like, do I not value my time? Like, you know, I talk about the worth of creative work, but also our time is money as much as money is currency that, you know, we can buy things with, etc. But yeah, I think that is really interesting. Asya, you have something you would want to add in?
I wanted to ask you, actually, do you think it's also a case of, like, you need to be in certain mind space to be creative? Because, okay, you can block out the calendar and be like, I'm going to be creative today. But also, if you have a lot of pressure to pay that studio rent or to do something else, then it's quite hard to actually be creative. I think that's why for many centuries, creativity has been a case of either artists who would die trying, or be a case of people who are quite privileged to be able to do it. So I think finding that balance is actually quite tricky.
It is definitely tricky. I think for me, it also helps to have a dedicated space, and be that a studio and definitely a community of people. I think if I had never had a studio in my life, I wouldn't have progressed with my career or taken my art, my creativity, my practice as seriously as I do and take it today. Have you got any kind of aha moments that you've gathered recently, or perhaps this year as we're kind of ending or approaching towards the end of 2023?
We talked about this before. It's okay to stop.
Oh, yes.
And it's okay to say this isn't working anymore. I need to do something else. I think definitely had those moments this year where, you know, you work really hard and you try really hard, but sometimes projects don't happen, they don't come to fruition. Also, like I say, you get tired. So it's okay to go, I need to rethink, I need to take a break, stop, you know, just going and going because I'm too frightened to stop, it's okay. And yeah, had definitely moments this year of going, ooh, and again, imposter syndrome, actually, am I any good at this? Like, is it me? What's going wrong? So yeah, I think stopping and also just saying no more. You know, letting, you know, if you have a bad client, and actually a really dear friend of mine who's an amazing entrepreneur, but, you know, we share war stories, it's a completely different industry, he's in FMCG, but he sent me this great quote about quitting and stopping is actually a skill. It's not failure, it's okay to stop and choose something else. And I think it's a hard thing to do, but I think it's really brave, and I think we should all allow ourselves to be braver to stop if it's not working. And I think, I don't know, I think as women as well, I think it's sometimes harder because you're like, oh, am I letting people down? Am I not good enough? All of those sort of things go through your mind. And yeah, that's definitely been my aha. And like I said, I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't kind of let certain things go. So that would be my point.
That's really powerful. Anything else to add?
You want to go first? I think my aha was like, okay, I don't have to accept being underpaid. I know, again, it's one of those obvious things, but I was like, okay, I can ask for more. And it's okay if they don't agree, that's also fine.
Right. Not to be liked.
Yeah, like that's fine. And, you know, them liking also doesn't make much difference. That's the thing to accept as well. Like, there are only certain people whose liking will make difference to how I feel or what my life looks like. In bigger picture, most people's liking doesn't make much difference. And the customer's liking in this case, like, or the people you do business with the financial element of liking. If you are talking about, for example, sustainability, but you are actually not valuing your work well, pricing it right, and standing the ground for it, like giving in, then is it really talking about sustainability, you know? So I had to accept that I'm like, okay, I'm not being nice when I'm sewing a button for free. Mm-hmm. I am actually becoming part of the problem by doing it for free and ruining the whole market for other people who really rely on making a living from sewing the button.
Excellent. And Joke, I know you've had a big year, you collaborated with Muji, you've had a lot of learnings probably. Anything, any highlights you would like to share?
Actually, recently I shared about how there's this pressure to always create what people are used to creating from you. And I do still really love creating what I do. But I used to also work in sculpture with my in my art practice. And that's something that I recently went back to. And I made this sculpture, which I entered into the Ingram Prize. Just like last minute, I didn't think anything of it. And then I ended up being a finalist. And then I realized, like, it's not to do with, I guess, being a finalist, but just the fact that people resonated with my journey and the fact that I'm not just... It can be easy to kind of stay stuck and to do the same thing. And if it works for you, that's fine. But for me, I really wanted to try something new. And I was so afraid for so many years. And the moment I did it, people were already saying, like, oh, I love this. And not that I'm getting validation from them, but I think just like realizing that we're all kind of like in this bubble where we feel like we have to meet standards or do things forever the same way because people are looking to you for that thing. So yeah, that's been really, really nice to just like to kind of become aware of. And I'm so excited just to try new things now and just to see where I end up going.
I was going to add something, one thing. I think the thing that we're all saying is it's about being true to your values. And I think if you take those through in your business, you'll attract the right customer, you'll attract the right people to your tribe, and you'll be happy because the minute you compromise your values, you're miserable. And I think it's a tough thing, and it's about boundaries and all those things. But I think if you can do that, that is your brand, and that's what people buy into. You know, they might buy your beautiful product, but actually they're also buying your story and your passion and your beliefs and a lot because your values align. And I think
I think more than ever, people want, you know, people want to have connection to stuff that they're consuming.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, I just want to acknowledge again where we are at the moment, at the heart of London's West End on Carnaby Street. And London is such a wonderful, beautiful beast that offers these incredible opportunities to us, but it is also taxing place as an artist to live and thrive, especially. And I think for that very reason, programs such as like the London Make Me are important, bringing artists from our respective communities to the high streets and having a chance to expose ourselves to the world, but also bringing people to next to what we do. Is there any other place where you could imagine living, thriving yourself? And if so, where is that happy place? And please tell me, and I will move in there immediately.
Maybe it's an imaginary place, London with better weather, you know? Yeah. So that it's not miserable outside. But I think London is quite special, that how even people deal with the miserable weather, you know? It's very, very London.
How do we deal with it?
Just ignore it. Complain about it and move on.
Yeah, could you have imagined, enabling your career in anywhere else?
Ooh. Yeah, I think London is really beautiful because it's just like so many different cultures coming together and just uniting, and we're all so different, but I don't know how it works, like we're all so different, but then we all have these connections as well that we build with each other. But other than that, I'm someone who, like, I just want to be everywhere, really. Like, the world is so big, why just stay in one place? My next destination might be Berlin, Germany, just so I can, speak the German language a bit more. Other than that, somewhere hot would be nice. Yeah, I agree with you, Asya, like, just somewhere with nice weather would be. Yeah.
And Madeline, you have grown up in Tasmania, now you're based in Park Royal, which is a bit similar to, I would say, to my creative community in Hackney Wick, in a way that is very industrial, kind of post-industrial, now very creative community. That also gives space for artists and these opportunities and pockets of space, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as an Australian in London, it is just such a... There's just so much going on, and there is enough space for everyone to do what they want to do. And I think even as, you know, interior design, you know, it's a pretty saturated industry. But even, you know, the times you go back to Australia, it's a beautiful country, but it's small. You know, there's not that many people. And London, I mean, everyone's from somewhere else. Everyone's kind of... People just scoop you up. And again, these programs and the people that you meet, I think people are so supportive. And even, you know, having had a studio in Park Royal, you know, Johnny, who's part of the team... Everyone's just so supportive and welcoming. Everyone wants everyone to do well. It's not competitive as such. Like, it's just nurturing, and everyone wants the best for everyone else because everyone's on a different journey and has come from a different place. Having grown up in Tasmania, I'm kind of used to this kind of weather. It's a little different to the rest of Australia. But I do miss the sunshine. It's just a great city. It really is. I love it.
We love it. Now, I wanted to ask if the audience has got any questions to our wonderful panelists and speakers. Anything? I'm just going to do a little round if anyone has got any questions. Yeah? So,
I found one, I guess. How do you spend your free time, if you have any?
What is that? Sorry, what is free time?
I don't want to.
As a mother of two teenagers, a wife, a pet owner, a homeowner, and a businesswoman, I don't have a lot of free time. But usually, there's often friends and dog walks. We live near the river, so that's also good. So being in nature is a nice way to unwind, and quite often wine.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Wine.
I just passed it down the joke.
I think, like you said as well, nature is just so calming, and just to be away from people. Like, people are great, but I think just to be surrounded by nature, just the natural elements, and just to relax and just to think, I think is quite nice. I've also taken on crocheting and knitting. And I guess it's kind of similar to like how I stitch and embroider, but it's also quite different in a lot of ways. And it's nice working on projects that aren't you know, I'm not going to sell or isn't going to be perceived in the same way as my artwork. So that's quite nice as well.
Cool. Amazing. I will also add to that that definitely nature, the power of trees, I think, is just, invigorating in a way that nothing else, maybe art can, and bubble baths, maybe with a glass of wine. I think that is enough for tonight. Thank you so much to our wonderful panelists and speakers, Madeline, Asya, and Joke. Thank you.
If you liked this episode, please review it or share it with a friend. To continue the conversation, please find us on social media at Women of the Week and Girl Get a Real Job. See you there.